Welcome back to the Inquisitive Prosecutors Podcast. I am Byron Suarez with the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office. I'll be handling the hosting duties today and asking the podcast's usual host, Mr. Jeff Rubin, a series of questions focusing on two areas of law involving our discovery obligations. The first area involves discovery obligations regarding state and local rap sheets, and we will be discussing a couple of attorney general opinions bearing on these obligations. We will also be covering a new law relating to a prosecutor's ability to provide Brady tips to defense attorneys. Then we will end with a discussion of our obligations when it comes to exculpatory information produced at a grand jury proceedings. The discussion will be informed by a recent attorney general opinion addressing those obligations when it comes to grand juries that do not ultimately indict.
This podcast will provide 60 minutes of MCLE ethics credit.
Jeff, let me begin the podcast by asking some questions regarding the distribution of State Department of Justice rap sheets. I know these rap sheets are sometimes referred to as CLETS rap sheets, and it's because CLETS is the system by which local law enforcement agencies can request and access the criminal history. And they're sometimes called CII raps because someone authorized to use CLETS obtains criminal history information by entering the California Identification Index number. But do you know why these records are called rap sheets?
Yes. RAP, R-A-P, stands for Record of Arrests and Prosecutions. However, they actually contain a lot more information than that. They'll include the person's name, date of birth, physical description, fingerprints, photos, dates of arrests, arresting agencies and booking numbers, charges, dispositions, sentencing information, and other similar data about the person to whom the rap sheet relates.
Are these rap sheets, which are maintained by an agency, i.e. Department of Justice, who rarely participates in any way in the investigation of county criminal prosecution, deemed to be in possession of a county prosecutor for purposes of a prosecutor's constitutional or statutory discovery obligations, even though nobody on the prosecution team has ever checked the database?
You know, in general, if you're prosecuting a case, you're deemed to be in constructive possession of information for Brady purposes that you as a prosecutor may not personally know about, but which a member of the prosecution team, like an investigating officer, knows about. Ordinarily, though, you're not deemed to be in possession of information that nobody on the prosecution team knows about. And if nobody on the prosecution team has run a witness's rap sheet, then under the general principles dictating when the prosecution is in possession of information, the information possessed by the Department of Justice should not technically be deemed to be in possession of the prosecution team unless the Department of Justice was the agency doing the investigation into the defendant. However, an exception to the general rule has developed when it comes to criminal history records and databases that are easily but only accessible to prosecutors and which are routinely checked by prosecutors preparing for a criminal prosecution. For both Brady purposes and statutory discovery purposes, we are deemed to be in possession of the Department of Justice criminal history rap sheets.
So does this mean that any information in any database that is reasonably accessible to us is deemed within our possession?
No, I mean, Byron, the entire internet is reasonably accessible to us, and we're not going to be deemed to be in possession of all the information on the internet. Defense counsel will sometimes argue to the contrary, though. They try to latch onto some language from a case called Littlefield that held the defense could not avoid their duty under Penal Code Section 1054.3, which is the reciprocal discovery provisions of the statute governing discovery. And by under Littlefield, it said that the defense couldn't avoid that duty by intentionally failing to obtain the address of one of their defense witnesses. And the address of one of their defense witnesses was something that had to be provided under that statute. And then there's another case called People versus Little, which held that when it came to DOJ, the Department of Justice rap sheets, they're in our possession because they were reasonably accessible to the prosecution. So that's like more of like almost a throwaway line. It's highly questionable whether, to the extent they stand for the proposition that anything reasonably accessible to us is within our possession, that they would remain good law in light of the more recent California Supreme Court decisions. And so far, criminal history records are the only type of record that has been deemed to be in possession of the prosecution team in any published decision in California or elsewhere. Notwithstanding the fact that nobody on the prosecution team is actually aware that exculpatory evidence exists in that record. In other words, if nobody on the team is aware of it, it's not normally going to be held to be in our possession unless it's this kind of criminal history database. There is an unpublished decision finding a Cal gang database was in the possession of the prosecution because the prosecution had reasonable but exclusive access to it in the same way that the prosecution had reasonable and exclusive access to other criminal history databases that they would routinely look at.
So what about local criminal history records of prosecution witnesses or defendants for purposes of their disclosure obligations? Are we deemed to be in possession of those too?
Yeah, you have your State Department or the Department of Justice rap sheets, and then often you have local criminal history databases. They are going to be deemed to be in our possession constructively under the same rationale for imputing constructive possession to us, local prosecutors, of the state criminal history records that are routinely checked and which are solely and reasonably accessible to members of the prosecution team.
You indicated that the rule imputing possession of the DOJ rap sheets of our witnesses to local prosecutors was premised in part on the defense being unable to access those records. But wasn't there a change a couple of years ago to the statute governing the Department of Justice obligations to provide rap sheets that now gives access to those DOJ rap sheets of anyone to defense counsel who simply asked for it?
Yeah, mostly yes. I mean, California Penal Code Section 11105 governs when the Attorney General of California has an obligation to furnish the state summary criminal history information, the DOJ rap sheets. The statute lists categories of individuals who must be provided that information. And among those persons is a public defender or attorney of record when representing a person in a criminal case or a juvenile delinquency proceeding, or on appeal, or on a post-conviction motion, or if they're on parole or mandatory supervision, or post-release community supervision, and there's a revocation proceeding or a revocation extension proceeding. Well, then information under this statute is provided to this individual. However, up until 2019, defense counsel ordinarily had to also show that access to the rap sheet was otherwise authorized by statutory or decisional law. And statutory or case law did not provide that access. But in 2019, that limiting language was lifted and replaced with language simply requiring that information in the rap sheet just had to be requested in the course of representation. So now, defense counsel can get the information themselves in the Department of Justice rap sheet basically simply upon request and filling out the forms that we talk about in a little bit.
Well, so then, given that defense counsel now has access to those rap sheets, does that mean we local prosecutors are no longer deemed to be in constructive possession of those rap sheets?
No. We're still going to be deemed to be in constructive possession of that information, and we'll have a duty to disclose at least the information in the rap sheet that falls under our constitutional or statutory discovery obligations. And keep in mind, Penal Code Section 1054.1, which governs our statutory discovery obligations, doesn't excuse a prosecutor from the statutory obligation to provide exculpatory information or felony convictions, which are some of the items designated that we have to turn over in discovery, just because the defense can or even has obtained that information via another avenue, although failure to provide it when they actually have it is not going to result in any prejudice, so probably not going to have much impact. But this change to 11105 does arguably impact whether failure to provide that information is a Brady violation, a violation of due process.
And why is that?
Because failure to disclose evidence that is known and or reasonably accessible to defense through due diligence is not a violation of federal due process. In other words, it's not a Brady violation. That's one of the elements of establishing a Brady violation. The only caveat might be that unless we alert the defense to the potential existence of exculpatory information in a witness's rap sheet, the DOJ rap sheet, a court might not find that due diligence requires the defense to make a request for the rap sheet from the Department of Justice.
Okay, so then, well, what does defense counsel have to do to obtain the rap sheets from the Department of Justice?
There is a Department of Justice website that allows defense counsel to electronically request the rap sheet of someone they designate either as their client, a witness, or a victim in a pending action. That rap sheet will then be sent directly to the attorney's office. If it appears based on, at least it appears based on the language on the form, that if that request is accompanied by a subpoena, they'll send a certified copy of the rap sheet. Otherwise, a non-certified copy will be sent. On the form, the defense counsel has to certify and affirm that the information sought is for use only in this pending criminal action and for no other purpose. They got to establish that they will share the information only if necessary for the defense of their client in the pending action and will not disseminate the information to anyone else except those working on behalf of their client, and only when it is reasonably necessary for the defense of the case involving their client. Also, they have to agree that if they provide another person access to the information, that person's got to be provided a copy of the certification and also agree to be bound by its terms. The information then can be disclosed in court in the pending criminal proceeding if necessary for the case, but may not be used for any other proceeding other than the pending criminal proceeding underlying this request. They got to fill out that form and, you know, certify that that's all true.
And so is the rap sheet redacted in any way by the Department of Justice?
Yes, but the redactions are limited to the removal of the juvenile record of the person and to sometimes, if it's a victim, the non-disclosure of the address of the victim.
What if the request is for the rap sheet of the client of the defense counsel? Must the juvenile record still be redacted?
According to an attorney general opinion that addressed the question of whether a local prosecutor could voluntarily provide the Department of Justice rap sheet of a criminal defendant to an attorney for the defendant, the attorney general believes and will redact, and we also must redact, if we're providing the rap sheet of the DOJ, juvenile court information from an adult defendant's rap sheet, even if the juvenile record relates to the adult defendant.
Well, so what if the request is made on behalf of a juvenile defendant?
In that circumstance, counsel for a juvenile defendant may receive an unredacted copy of the juvenile defendant's rap sheet.
If a criminal defense attorney asks you, a local prosecutor, to provide the DOJ criminal history record of his own client, are you required to provide it?
No. The most recent AG opinion on that question concluded that while Penal Code Section 11105 requires the Department of Justice to provide a defense attorney with the state rap sheet of his own client, subject to those redactions we mentioned, that section does not impose any obligations on county prosecutors to disclose state rap sheets.
But Jeff, are AJ opinions binding?
They are not, but they are entitled to great weight. And in the absence of controlling authority, these opinions are persuasive regarding how a statute should be interpreted. And by the way, if we follow them, that's going to provide some insulation from any claim of misconduct for following the directions in those opinions. Though I should caution you, and you're going to see, I would not recommend following at least one of the recent opinions regarding what information we can disclose. In any event, even without the Attorney General opinion, it's clear from the face of Section 11105 that it only imposes disclosure obligations on the Attorney General, not local prosecutors.
Okay, but may we, as local prosecutors, voluntarily provide defense counsel the Department of Justice rap sheet for his own client?
Yes. In that same opinion, the AG opined that we could voluntarily do so. I mean, Penal Code Section 11105, Subdivision B9, makes defense counsel an authorized recipient of that information for purposes of preparing for trial. And, you know, as a general proposition, California law doesn't forbid secondary disclosure of 11105 rap sheet information among authorized recipients. In other words, one authorized recipient can give it to another authorized recipient. It only bars disclosure from one authorized recipient to an unauthorized recipient. Thus, so we don't have to provide the DOJ rap sheet of a defendant to his or her defense counsel. But as a general matter, nothing forbids us from voluntarily doing so when requested during the course of a criminal discovery process.
So if we choose to voluntarily provide defense counsel the Department of Justice rap sheet of their client, must any information be redacted from the rap sheet before turning it over to defense?
You know, that was also addressed in the AG opinion that we've been discussing. The short answer is yes. if the defendant is now an adult and is being represented in an adult case. Welfare and Institutions Code Section 827, the confidentiality provisions, say that because of those, juvenile court info must be redacted even from the adult dead defendant's rap sheet. Otherwise, no other redaction is necessary.
So what about if the attorney requesting the information is representing a juvenile defendant in a juvenile case and is asking for the state criminal history record? Must the information about the juvenile case still be redacted?
The attorney general opined it was not necessary in that specific circumstance, as long as they're representing a juvenile and the record relates to the juvenile. It's just once the juvenile ages out and becomes an adult defendant, then that record has to be redacted.
Okay, so let's go back for a minute to the question of what the attorney general believes must be redacted from a DOJ rap sheet when defense counsel comes in and seeks to obtain the criminal history record of a witness or victim.
The attorney general opined that aside from the juvenile record information found on the rap sheet of a victim or a witness and the information protected by Marcy's law, no other redaction is required.
So if the person is not designated as a victim, only as a witness, in the form the defense counsel filled out, there's no redaction other than the juvenile record by the AG?
Correct. The AG will provide the entire rap sheet.
And how do they determine whether the person whose rap sheet is requested is the victim?
They will rely on the requesting defense attorney to identify the person whose record is requested as either a victim or a relative of a victim. The DOJ does not do any verification to check if the person designated as a witness is in fact a victim. They simply rely on the fact that the form is signed under penalty of perjury.
So what if the person is a witness who may have previously been victimized by the defendant, but is not the victim in this pending case and is just testifying as a character witness, as a 1101B, 1108, 1109 witness? Are those persons considered a victim by the DOJ for the purposes of disclosure obligations under 1105B9?
You know, the requesting form requires counsel under penalty of perjury to designate whether that rap sheet relates to a client, victim, or witness. The form doesn't state, though, whether the term victim only refers to persons victimized in the present case that they're representing the defendant on, or extends to victims of the defendant in past cases who might be testifying. I did speak with a representative of the Attorney General's office, and they stated their interpretation of the term victim is not limited to the particular case causing the request to be made.
But do they even notify the victim that the rap sheet is being turned over before they send it to the defense?
You know, in the AG opinion, addressing whether a local prosecutor could turn over the Department of Justice rap sheet of a victim or witness, it says that if a local district attorney elects to furnish defense counsel with a copy of the victim's rap sheet without a discovery order to do so, then the DA should redact any information covered by Marcy's law, any information, before providing the rap sheet to defense counsel, or afford the victim an opportunity to object to the disclosure of the information. They say that in the AG opinion, and that's how they're recommending we handle it. But from their standpoint, it appears the Department of Justice will simply redact the address of the victim and nothing else, and will not notify the victim. So to the extent Marcy's law would protect anything else in there, they're simply redacting the address of the victim.
So everything in the rap sheet would be turned over by the AG, even if the information is irrelevant, like a conviction from 20 years ago for driving on a suspended license.
That's right. In fact, if the person is designated as a witness by defense counsel, and they're just witnesses, even the addresses are not going to be redacted.
But what about the state constitutional right of privacy? Wouldn't that require at least a determination that the need for the information in the witness rap sheet outweighs the statutory right of the defense under Section 11105 to the information?
You know, the Attorney General opinion on this question dismisses, without much discussion, the notion that redaction, either by the Department of Justice or by county prosecutors who are voluntarily providing the DOJ rap sheet, they're saying it would not be, they really don't discuss much whether or not the California state right of privacy would prevent further redaction. There's, in the opinion, they talk about the right of privacy is not absolute, and the legislature or courts may balance an individual's interest in preventing disclosure of his or her criminal history information against other compelling interests favoring disclosure, such as those of a defendant in a criminal proceeding. In other words, they're saying, look, the legislature has determined that the AG has to disclose this rap sheet information to defense counsel for purposes of the defendant's representation. And because they've done that, that supersedes the state constitutional right of privacy in arrest records. That's what the Department of Justice, via the AG opinion, came to the conclusion as.
Well, let me ask you, do you agree with that?
Well, I agree that any information contained in the rap sheet that we are required to provide under either our constitutional or statutory discovery obligation has to be disclosed. But as to whether the actual rap sheet itself and irrelevant or non-exculpatory information that is contained in there, that is all, that remains protected by the state constitutional right of privacy, because you got a state constitutional right of privacy in your arrest and conviction records, I don't think that either the AG or local prosecutors have a right or even authority to unilaterally turn that over to the defense. Now, I go into a fair amount of depth why I believe that's the case in the Inquisitive Prosecutor Guide that accompanies this podcast. But to get to the heart of why I think neither the AG nor local prosecutors should be turning over the entire rap sheet without a court order or without a court doing a balancing test as to whether the interest in disclosure of what would clearly be non-exculpatory, irrelevant information contained in the rap sheet outweighs the state constitutional privacy interest. As even the AG recognized, there's got to be a compelling interest in disclosure to outweigh the privacy right. But there is no interest, let alone a compelling interest, in disclosure of information in there like a decades-old arrest for trespassing or DUI or another crime that doesn't involve moral turpitude or any conduct that would have any bearing on the ability of counsel to defend the case. And that doesn't change just because someone witnessed a crime or was the victim of a crime. There's got to be some compelling interest why this information is relevant. Otherwise, it should remain protected, in my personal opinion.
Well, so what about the fact that the legislator has lifted any limitations on disclosure of the rap sheet under Section 11105?
It seems to me that the Attorney General opinion assumed that the judiciary is bound by the legislature's interpretation of the scope of a privacy right, as opposed to simply taking into consideration existing statutes to determine the scope of a right of privacy and simply giving the legislature some deference in assessing whether there's a reasonable expectation of privacy. In my estimation, and I could be wrong, I often am, it assumes too much deference on the part of the courts to legislative determinations as to the scope of a state constitutional right. I mean, the change to 11105 was not a change to the state constitution. And the legislature doesn't get to override the state constitution unless they've got voter approval. Ultimately, it's the judiciary who has the responsibility to determine whether legislation violates the constitutional provision. The legislature doesn't get to do that. Interpreting the scope of a state or federal constitution is a core judicial function. And I don't think that responsibility, that judicial function, can be abdicated by simply allowing the legislature to dictate the scope of a constitutional provision. In other words, the California constitutional right of privacy. You know, it's well established that a state statute doesn't trump the Constitution. And if complete deference to the legislature in interpreting the scope of a constitutional provision was required, as described in the AG opinion, the courts would essentially be condoning a legislative preemption of a core function of the judiciary, which would violate the separation of powers doctrine, going back to Marbury versus Madison. I mean, to quote from like an 1857 California Supreme Court decision, it would be idle to make the Constitution the supreme law and then require the judges to take the oath to support it, and after all that, require the courts to take the legislative construction as correct.
So, when it comes to the State Department of Justice rap sheets, you would just provide the discoverable information in the rap sheet, not the rap sheet itself, with all the irrelevant information?
Correct. Whether it comes to the Department of Justice rap sheet or our local rap sheet, I would only provide the discoverable information in that rap sheet. Although I would tell the defense not all the information in the rap sheet is being provided. So if they wanted to get the entire rap sheet directly from the Department of Justice, they could do so. Or if they wanted to get the entire information from the local rap sheet, they can make a motion and the local court to request that information.
What if the person requesting the Department of Justice or a local prosecutor for the rap sheet of a witness or victim is a self-represented defendant? Does that make a difference?
Yes. In the same AG opinion that addressed whether the Department of Justice could provide the state witness or victim rap sheet directly to the defense counsel, they addressed whether it would be okay to give that rap sheet in full to a self-represented defendant in a criminal case. And they concluded the Department of Justice nor a local prosecutor could do so. They said that while the legislature has mandated that the AG furnish rap sheet information to defense counsel, there was no similar mandate for the AG to do so for a self-represented defendant. In fact, they said the legislature didn't even vest the AG with discretion to do so. And they said that given the lack of statutory or case law authorizing a self-represented defendant to receive the State Department rap sheet, except as mandated by the Constitution or the discovery statutes, it would be unlawful for a DA to voluntarily furnish a witness's or victim's criminal history information to a self-represented defendant, except the information that has to be disclosed by specifically by statute or by the federal Constitution. If a self-represented defendant wants discovery of non-mandated witness or victim rap sheet information, they got to get a court order.
So the AG and local prosecutors can turn over information contained in the rap sheet to a pro per defendant that might be discoverable.
Yeah, they recognize that a pro per defendant would be entitled to some information contained in the record as part of the criminal discovery process. So, yeah, they're going to be entitled to, for example, the felony convictions of any material witness that's likely to be critical to the outcome of the trial. That's under 1054.1D. That's one of our statutory obligations. And to the extent dictated by constitutional considerations. So information about, for example, witnesses' misdemeanor convictions of moral turpitude to the extent that they are rise to the level of Brady, that would have to be turned over. But the opinion distinguished those mandated disclosures by the prosecutor in criminal cases from disclosing the state rap sheet itself to a self-represented defendant.
All right. I'd like to ask about the rules governing distribution of local rap sheets. Does Section 11105 apply to local rap sheets?
No. Local rap sheets, in other words, local criminal history databases, that whether or not dissemination is okay by local criminal justice agencies is controlled by a different penal code section. You look at penal code sections 13200 through 13326, not 11105. And even the AG opinion recognized it, the inapplicability of 11105 to local criminal history databases.
What does the section governing distribution of local rap sheets say about whether we must or can provide local rap sheets to defense counsel?
So the language of 13300B9 is very similar to the language of 11105B9, except, and this is critical, it retains the language that was in 11105 prior to 2019. In other words, it also doesn't allow for the distribution to a defense counsel unless that is requested in the course of representation and there is authorization for access provided by statutory or case law. So it's the same language as the language that used to be in 11105B9 that precluded defense counsel from being given this information unless there was case law and statutory authority. Now, of course, there is case law and statutory authority authorizing disclosure of some of the information in local rap sheets. But existing case law, including decisions from the California Supreme Court, hold that the local rap sheet itself does not need to be disclosed. And there's certainly no statutory or decisional law authorizing unilateral disclosure of non-exculpatory and irrelevant information contained in a local rap sheet that's protected by the California State Right of Privacy or Marcy's Law, which is also, by the way, in the California Constitution. In fact, providing such information is arguably a crime under Penal Code Section 11142, which says that any person authorized by law to receive a record or information obtained from a record, that's us, who knowingly furnishes the record or information to a person who is not authorized by law to receive the record or information is going to be guilty of a misdemeanor. So in sum, there is a duty to provide certain information that's required to be disclosed by statutory case law that's contained in the local rap sheet, but in my opinion, not the local rap sheet itself.
But can we voluntarily provide the local rap sheet?
We can, but it's got to be redacted to remove, at a minimum, the juvenile record of a witness or a victim, information protected by Marcy's law, and I would argue any other information contained in a rap sheet that we are not required to provide under existing statutory constitutional case law and which is otherwise protected by the constitutional state right of privacy, such as your arrest records that are not relevant or not material, unless we get a court determination regarding whether or not the need for disclosure is outweighed by the state constitutional right of privacy.
So what type of information contained in a local or state rap sheet are we required under statutory or constitutional or case law?
All right, so this is quite a long list. I'm going to be talking for a little bit here. But it includes any information that would be in the rap sheet of a prosecution witness or victim that could constitute favorable material evidence in a pending prosecution of the defendant. In other words, information the disclosure of which would be reasonably probable to change the outcome of a trial or other proceeding. In other words, Brady information. We also have to provide any information contained in the rap sheet of a prosecution witness or victim that would fall under one of the categories of evidence listed in Penal Code Section 1054.1. Those categories of information likely include or likely be found in a rap sheet of a prosecution witness or victim would be a felony conviction of any material witness whose credibility is likely to be critical to the outcome of trial, although to be on the safe side, I would disclose a felony conviction of any of our witnesses. We're going to call to testify and avoid issues of whether or not the witness is material or their credibility is likely to be critical. Also, any exculpatory evidence under Penal Code Section 1054.1e. And by the way, exculpatory evidence is broader than Brady evidence. It doesn't have to be material. So like your everyday impeaching evidence would likely be covered. Misdemeanor convictions of moral turpitude. Arrests for misdemeanors or felonies involving moral turpitude.
But isn't the fact that someone was arrested inadmissible to prove anything?
Generally, yes. The test for our discovery obligations doesn't necessarily turn on whether or not evidence is going to be admissible. The conduct of moral turpitude, which led to the arrest, can potentially be used to impeach if it can be proved up, just like evidence underlying a conviction, if it's potentially admissible, subject to an evidence code section 352 objection. There are other reasons why the arrests could be deemed relevant, other than simply because the crime for which they're arrested was a crime of moral turp. So like in People versus Pena, 2005 California Supreme Court case, the fact that the witness was arrested on an unrelated matter and unsuccessfully sought help on getting released, the court said was relevant to the witness's credibility because it provided a reason for her hostility to the prosecution and also undercut another portion of her direct testimony. And then in another older California Supreme Court case, evidence that co-defendants had previously been arrested together was relevant as demonstrating bias or interest between these two co-defendants because of their close affinity. In other words, there may be information based on the arrests or convictions that in a particular case might be exculpatory in some sense. Also, if there's information contained in the witness's rap sheet indicating the witness is facing pending criminal charges, what sometimes is referred to as coyer evidence, that information should be disclosed because it constitutes evidence favorable to the defense insofar as the jury could view this circumstance as negatively impacting the credibility of the testimony by that witness because they feel like they need to help the prosecution in some way because that might help them in the pending criminal case that they're facing. If there's information indicating a witness is on parole, probation, or under any of these other kinds of court supervision, diversion, mandatory supervision, etc., regardless of the nature of the conduct for which they were placed on probation or parole. That information is also potentially impeaching under the rationale that a witness might have a motive to lie to avoid revocation of probation. It's not because the underlying crime bears on the witness's credibility directly or involves moral turpitude. And the same with what I was talking about before, Coyer evidence. If they're facing a pending charge, it doesn't have to be a pending charge of moral turpitude. It just has to be a pending charge. And then so-called Engstrom evidence. If you see in the rap sheet prior acts of violence or aggression, even if they do not involve moral turp, if there's evidence in the rap sheet of a victim that would be material to a claim of self-defense, or where the defendant is trying to show mitigating circumstances to reduce the charge, that should also be disclosed.
And how about juvenile adjudications found in the rap sheet of a prosecution witness?
You know, although the issue is not entirely resolved, it should be assumed that juvenile adjudications themselves are not admissible to impeach. And keep in mind, I keep on talking about impeaching because if something is available to impeach, that imbues it with discoverability. In any event, all juvenile records, regardless of whether or not they are physically in the possession of law enforcement agencies, such as the DA's office, are still deemed to be within the exclusive control of a third party, in other words, the juvenile court. They are not subject to the discovery provisions of 1054. As opined in one of these attorney general opinions, juvenile records contained in a rap sheet may not be disclosed absent a court order made pursuant to Welfare and Institutions Code Section 827. So, all that in mind would indicate, well, we don't have an obligation to disclose it. Has to be weighed against the fact that the conduct underlying the juvenile adjudication is admissible to impeach and can even constitute Brady evidence. So, if a prosecutor is aware of Brady information contained in juvenile records of prosecution witnesses, the Brady obligation is going to trump that confidentiality statute. Accordingly, there's an obligation on the prosecutor to alert the defense to the fact that Brady information may exist in the juvenile records and direct the defense to file an 827 petition or make a prosecution request under 827. In other words, we can't directly provide it to the defense counsel, but we can alert them to the existence of that information. And as noted in one of the AG opinions, in general, nothing precludes us from advising defense counsel to the existence of confidential information in the rap sheet without going into the details so that defense counsel can seek an order requiring disclosure.
So should information contained in a rap sheet of a prosecution witness that is discoverable be turned over directly to the defense?
As we've mentioned throughout the discussion we've been having, rap sheets and the information contained in these rap sheets are generally protected by the state constitutional right of privacy. However, given the fact that a federal constitutional right will trump any state constitutional right of privacy, and given the case law requiring the disclosure of Brady evidence, notwithstanding the state constitutional right of privacy in arrest or conviction records, as a matter of practice and also practicality, information found in a rap sheet of a prosecution witness that must be disclosed under the Brady due process obligation should ordinarily be disclosed as a matter of course directly to the defense attorney without having to ask the court to conduct a balancing test. And even though, as a general rule, a prosecutor should not unilaterally decide to disclose information within the possession of the prosecution team directly to the defense when that information is protected by a state constitutional right of privacy or because of some other privilege, where you have published decisions or statutes that have essentially predetermined the outcome of the balancing tests, the courts do not appear to require a prosecutor to seek judicial review before doing so. So, as with information contained in the rap sheet that constitutes favorable material information, when the type of information contained in the witness's rap sheet has been determined already under case law, like Engstrom, Coyer, etc., to be impeaching or exculpatory under the statutory obligation to disclose, it is likely unnecessary to ask a court to engage in the balancing test that's usually required when weighing a defendant's interest in disclosure against a privilege or privacy right before disclosing information in the rap sheet that falls into categories of information we just identified as needing to be disclosed, all those categories we were just talking about.
So, Jeff, I understand that there has been a recent amendment to Penal Code Section 13300, the statute that governs local rap sheets. What is that about?
Well, as of January 1st, 2024, the legislature, via Assembly Bill 709, authorized a limited form of voluntary disclosure of information contained in a local rap sheet when it comes to peace officers. Under the newly added subdivision O to Section 13300, the legislature authorized a public prosecutor to voluntarily provide a public defender's office, an alternate public defender's office, or a licensed attorney of record in a criminal case with a Brady list, or at least a Brady tip regarding information contained in the officer's personnel file, notwithstanding the Pitcher statutes. Now, it's not 100% clear whether it authorizes providing an entire Brady list, in other words, every officer who's on an officer's Brady list, or just disclosure of a Brady tip in a particular case. The legislative analysis that accompanied that bill strongly indicates the former, but the actual statutory language is a little bit more ambiguous in this regard.
Whatever would be provided is voluntary, though, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What was the impetus for the amendment to Section 13300?
So just as a short little history of Assembly Bill 709, because it underwent several changes throughout its passing through the legislature, the original version would simply have allowed prosecutors who had actual possession of a transcript that contained potentially exculpatory or impeaching material involving a peace officer witness to provide an unofficial copy of the transcript to the defense and allow defense to use it without having to pay a court reporter for another transcript. That language was removed. A subsequent version would have made changes to 13300B9, which would have conformed the language in that paragraph to the current language in 11105B9, requiring disclosure upon request. But that was also removed. So ultimately, the final version of the bill, which I mentioned to you earlier, the purpose was described in the last analysis of the bill, and it was to facilitate and expedite Brady disclosures by allowing a prosecutor to provide a list of information to criminal defense counsel about cases that could possibly involve exculpatory or impeachment evidence relating to testifying peace officers. The bill was drafted to address a question left open in a case called Association of Los Angeles Deputy Sheriffs v. Superior Court of Los Angeles County. It's commonly known now as the ALANS case. It's a California Supreme Court case from 2019 relating to whether Brady tip information may be released by a prosecutor's office to the defense without violating the Pitcher statutes.
Could you help us explain that?
Yeah, so most prosecutor's office now compile a list of peace officers who the office has learned either via a Pitcher's motion or some other avenue have potentially Brady material. In other words, favorable material, exculpatory or impeaching information that's contained in their personnel file. Many law enforcement agencies also come to agreements with local DA's offices to provide a list of officers falling into this category. To meet their constitutional and or their statutory discovery obligations in a pending case, or maybe in some past cases where the prosecutor learns of new Brady information about an officer after conviction, prosecutors will provide a Brady tip to the defense and or file their own Brady Pitcher's motion to obtain the information that they received from the agency, and then provide that information to the defense. Whether all aspects of this process was authorized was subject to some debate. But in the case of ALEDS, it came to a head. The Sheriff's Department had sought to compile and provide to the DA's office a list of names of deputies with founded administrative investigations for various types of conduct that qualify potentially as Brady material. The specifics would not be provided of the investigation, only the Brady tip. So then the associations of the Los Angeles Deputy Sheriffs sought an injunction in the trial court preventing the department from disclosing the identity of deputies on the Brady list absent compliance with the Pitcher's procedures. However, California Supreme Court held the Sheriff's Department could provide Brady alerts to the prosecution, and that the the department didn't violate Penal Code Section 832.7, which is part of the PICCHA statutes, by sharing with prosecutors the fact that an officer who is a potential witness in a pending criminal prosecution may have relevant, exonerating, or impeaching material in that officer's confidential personnel file.
Did the California Supreme Court in ALAD say law enforcement agencies must create Brady lists or must provide Brady alerts to the prosecution?
No, they did not directly state either, but they did strongly suggest that if Brady alerts are not provided, there must be some mechanism for law enforcement to provide the information to the prosecution. On the other hand, California Supreme Court expressly declined to address whether it would violate confidentiality provisions for a prosecutor to share an alert with the defense. Also, the ALADS decision created some ambiguity as to the permissibility of a police department providing a Brady tip to the district attorney's office for inclusion on a list in advance of a pending prosecution in which the officer was a potential witness. So the legislative analysis of the bill that added this new subdivision to 13300 said the bill would legislatively answer the question left open in ALADS, albeit in a way that went beyond merely being able to provide a Brady tip that was provided to the DA's office by the law enforcement, subsequently to the defense. The analysis stated the bill would allow a prosecutor to share confidential Brady lists with the defense without regard to whether an officer on the list was going to be called as a witness in a particular case. Moreover, unlike when police officer or peace officer personnel information is released pursuant to the PICCHA statutes, the Brady list information would not necessarily be subject to a protective order, though the only information on the list would be the name of the officer and the name of the defendant and the docket number in the case where the officer would be a witness or had been a witness.
So, as a practical matter, this bill creates a new exception to the confidentiality of peace officers' personal records, namely by allowing prosecutors to widely disseminate confidential information obtained from peace officers' personnel records, like the identity of a peace officer with potential exculpatory or impeachment material in their personnel file, without regard to whether the information is material to a specific case?
Correct.
What is the potential impact of this bill, AB 709, on Brady PICCHA's motions?
So in the analysis, they specifically discussed what this new bill's impact on PICCHA's motions would be. Given that this bill would allow Brady lists to be disclosed broadly, without a prior assessment by the prosecutor about whether disclosure of the officer's involvement in a particular case is material, this bill could increase PICCHA's motions. The rationale behind that conclusion is that if a prosecutor's office chooses to provide a comprehensive Brady list, even though it's not required to do so, the defense might more easily file PICCHA's motions, since disclosure of the fact that an officer is on a Brady list will usually be enough to provide the good cause showing that's necessary to obtain in-camera review when a defense counsel files a PICCHA's motion. In other words, it makes it more likely a PICCHA's motion will be made based simply on the existence of the officer's name on the list without the defense having to otherwise make the more standard plausible justification for review of the information in camera.
So assuming AB 709 permits prosecutors to voluntarily provide full Brady lists of all officers, does it allow prosecutors to make a more limited disclosure, say like a Brady tip in an individual case where the officer is going to be a witness?
I would say it's likely that the authorization that's given to a public prosecutor to, you know, quote, provide a licensed attorney of record in a criminal case with a list containing only the names of the peace officer and defendant and the corresponding case number in order to facilitate and expedite notifying defense counsel representing criminal defendants whose cases may involve testimony by that peace officer of exculpatory or impeachment evidence involving that peace officer, would also likely permit releasing a, quote, list of officers just of the officers who the prosecution planned to call in a particular case solely to the defense counsel handling that particular case. In other words, a much less broad use of the statute to provide information to the defense.
But doesn't subdivision O of the new version of Section 13300 state that any disclosure made pursuant to the subdivision shall only be made upon agreement, by the public defender's office, alternate public defender's office, or the licensed attorney of record in a criminal case?
Yes. Well, since the disclosure is entirely voluntary on the part of the prosecution, we don't have to do it at all. It would defy logic for a defense counsel to refuse to agree to simple disclosure of information about an officer in a pending or past case, rather than insisting on accepting disclosure of either an entire Brady list of all officers in any case or nothing at all. Indeed, the whole reason that was probably included in there, the agreement from the public defender or alternate public defender's office, that was included to address concerns that confidential information about clients other than the defendant represented by those offices in a pending or past case would be disclosed. In other words, Section 13300 was amended to allow not only the disclosure of the list of officers, but also the names of defendants in cases in which the officer may have testified in the past. Now, that kind of information is potentially protected from disclosure under Section 13300. So they created this exception to the 13300's protection for local rap sheet information. And so now what they didn't want happening was, well, let's say the public defender's office says, no, if you start distributing this list, it has a list of all these other people who were convicted of crimes, and if that's going to happen, they want to be involved and have an agreement to it. But again, it's all voluntary, so I don't think this is going to be an issue requiring that they agree to it.
Wow, okay. Well, let's shift a little bit. In the remaining time, let's talk about another recent AG opinion relating to obligations regarding exculpatory information elicited at a grand jury that does not issue an indictment. But before we do that, let me ask a question of you that was not addressed in the opinion. What is our obligation to disclose to the grand jury impeaching or exculpatory information found in the criminal history, either state or local, of our witnesses?
Okay, so, you know, there's no duty on the prosecutor to disclose exculpatory evidence to the grand jury that's imposed by the United States Constitution. There is, or there may be a duty imposed by the California Constitution, but there's definitely a duty, a statutory duty, to inform the grand jury of the nature and existence of exculpatory evidence, and then inform the grand jury of its power to order any additional evidence to be produced. And in this case, back in 1975, a case called Johnson, the California Supreme Court construed an existing statute, Penal Code Section 939.7, as placing an implied obligation on the prosecutor to disclose any known exculpatory evidence to the grand jury. And that holding in Johnson was later codified by the legislature in a different Penal Code Section, 939.71, which now states, if the prosecutor is aware of exculpatory evidence, the prosecutor shall inform the grand jury of its nature and existence.
So does that mean that there is a duty to inform the grand jury of information in a witness who is testifying before the grand jury of impeaching evidence in the witness rap sheet?
Although the duty to inform the jury of exculpatory evidence doesn't likely require the disclosure of exculpatory evidence of very little probative value, and the failure to provide that kind of evidence will not result in the dismissal of an indictment unless the evidence would have been reasonably probable to have prevented the indictment if it were made known to the grand jury. Given that there's a duty to inform the grand jury of the nature and existence of evidence reasonably tending to negate guilt, it's pretty broad, and that such evidence can potentially include evidence of past criminal acts impeaching the credibility of a witness, prosecutors should alert the grand jury to information contained in a criminal history record that bears on the credibility of a witness testifying before a criminal grand jury.
Okay. So, well, let's get to the question that was actually directly posed in the recent AG opinion. What are our discovery obligations when it comes to exculpatory information or materials produced at the grand jury when the grand jury does not indict? Let's say one of the witnesses we call at a grand jury lies, and there's no indictment. Later, that same witness is called to testify in one of our other cases. Can we inform the defense of the witness's testimony if the information would constitute favorable material evidence or exculpatory evidence?
Okay, so, you know, grand jury proceedings are generally confidential. If an indictment is returned, Any transcript would be made public shortly after. So exculpatory testimony in that grand jury proceeding could be disclosed without any barriers to doing so. But if an indictment is not returned, then some other issues crop up. Now, there are two statutes that potentially would allow, currently existing statutes, that would allow prosecutors to meet their discovery obligations regarding testimony that might be exculpatory in an unrelated prosecution. Penal Code Section 924.2 and Penal Code Section 924.6.
What does Penal Code Section 924.2 say?
Well, it provides that any court may require a grand juror to disclose the testimony of a witness examined before the grand jury for the purposes of ascertaining whether it is consistent with that given by the witness before the court, or to disclose the testimony given before the grand jury by any person if that person is later charged with perjury based on giving that testimony. So those are the two circumstances. And if those circumstances exist, the statute appears to allow disclosure of the witness's testimony at a grand jury, regardless of whether an indictment issued. And a prosecutor could meet their any discovery obligations in that circumstance simply by asking the court to allow disclosure of the witness's testimony. However, that exception allowing release is pretty limited. It only allows disclosure for bringing out evidence where we're prosecuting the witness for perjury on when they testified either at the grand jury or currently. And it only authorizes it in another situation for purposes of impeachment. It does not authorize a litigant to obtain unlimited disclosure in advance of a witness's testimony. And so to preserve the narrow scope of that statute, the courts have held the appropriate procedure is for the witness to testify first. Counsel may then request the court to examine the transcript of that witness's grand jury testimony in camera to determine if it provides relevant impeachment material. And if it does, then the court may release the relevant pages to counsel with a protective order restricting the use of the material to impeachment.
What if those limited circumstances are not present?
Well, then you got to look at Penal Code Section 924.6, which seems to provide the easiest method for meeting a prosecutor's discovery obligations, either statutory or constitutional. And that section states, if no indictment is returned, the court that impaneled the grand jury shall, upon application of either party, order disclosure of all or part of the testimony of the witness before the grand jury to a defendant and the prosecutor in connection with any pending or subsequent criminal proceeding before any court, if the court finds, following an in-camera hearing, which is includes a review of the grand jury's testimony, that the testimony is relevant and appears to be admissible. Because 924.6 permits disclosure if the testimony is simply relevant and appears to be admissible, it should ordinarily allow prosecutors to obtain and disclose any testimony that falls into the category of Brady evidence or even exculpatory evidence under Penal Code Section 1054.1e.
What if either of those statutes don't apply or are not that easily used?
Well, that was the gist of the question posed in a recent Attorney General opinion that was sought by Yolo County DA Jeff Reisig. Specifically, the Attorney General was asked, do prosecutors' disclosure obligations under Brady and Penal Code Section 1054.1, the statutory obligation, encompass materials from criminal grand jury proceedings, despite the fact those proceedings are conducted in secret?
And what did the Attorney General opine?
They said yes. Prosecutors' disclosure obligations under both Brady and Section 1054.1 encompass materials from criminal grand jury proceedings, despite the fact those proceedings are conducted in secret. Now, the AG did recognize in this opinion that while grand jury indictments and reports may eventually be disclosed, the grand jury operates in secret. However, the AG also opined that a California law on grand jury secrecy cannot override federal due process principles as explained in Brady and its progeny. So, the prosecutor's disclosure obligations under Brady does encompass materials from criminal grand jury proceedings despite the fact those proceedings are conducted in secret.
But what if the Brady evidence related to ongoing criminal grand jury proceedings and disclosure would then undermine the interests served by grand jury secrecy, like compromising a pending investigation.
The AG opined the answer is not to exclude the materials from the Brady right, but for the prosecution to seek a protective order to address any particularized concerns. They observed that just because material from a criminal grand jury proceeding may be listed in Section 1054.1, disclosure of that material could nevertheless be prohibited under a different statute. So if there was good cause to believe that threats or possible danger to the safety of a victim or witness, if there was a possible loss or destruction of evidence, or a possible compromise of other investigations by law enforcement, then you could get a protective order or delayed disclosure under 1054.7. And even where the material does have to be disclosed to the defendant under Section 1054.1, in appropriate circumstances, the prosecutor may seek a protective order to prohibit public dissemination of the document.
Would that information include not just transcripts of the testimony, but non-testimonial material, like, let's say, exhibits?
Yes. Generally, exhibits introduced at the grand jury are not included with the transcript of the grand jury, and some of these sections deal with the release of the transcript. But the Attorney General concluded, we see no basis in Section 1054.1 to exclude material from criminal discovery on the ground that it derives from criminal proceedings before a grand jury, and that can include both testimony and evidence that is consists of exhibits.
So, in light of the AG opinion, can a prosecutor unilaterally decide to turn over Brady or statutory materials directly to the defense?
To the extent the opinion can be read as suggesting that the prosecutor can simply turn over the information protected by the grand jury secrecy rules to the defendant after simply asking the court to issue a protective order, I think it goes a little beyond what would be permitted. I think it's probably better to ask the court to also do the analysis that's required under Section 924.6. In other words, if that section is applicable, or even if it's not applicable, to do a standard balancing analysis of whether any confidentiality interest in the grand jury proceedings is outweighed by the interest of the defendant in disclosure.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much. I think that's all I got for now.
All right, Byron. Well, let's bid farewell to our listeners.
Farewell to our listeners. Till next time.